inside the feral zone.
Greetings, listeners. Welcome back inside the feral zone. I am Renee Komen, operating under cover of darkness from Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Clumpire. Now, the Feral Zone is a sister podcast of the Troubled Men podcast. It appears in this space from time to time. Some things about it are similar, some things are different. Tonight, we have, once again, a terrific co-host. I think this is his fourth or fifth appearance on the show. He's a fantastic guitar player, songwriter, singer, a builder. He's also a former owner of the Mermaid Lounge and Truck Farm, the location of the original Chaz Fest. He was a member of Tribe Nunzio and founder of Tribe Nunzio, founder of the Geraniums, also a member of the Valparaiso Men's Chorus, and now with the terrific band Strawberry. Without further ado, the great Mr. Jeff Treffinger. Welcome, Jeff.
Greetings, Renee. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good, man.
It's good to see you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Yeah. We were trying to figure out when the last time I'd actually laid eyes on you was. It's been months, man.
Yeah, it may have been Jazz Fest.
Jazz Fest, that's crazy.
Something like that. Yeah, I've had those gifts for you for quite a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was very nice. A cherished listener of the podcast, yeah. David Sees. We'll give him a shout out a little bit later.
Right on.
But
the money's still the same, right?
The money's the same, what, that you're going to get paid tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah, all the water you can drink. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. It's, you know, we have a full bar here, but I know that's it's not your tip these days, so that's cool. We like the clean living tip. And I was going back over the first time you were on the show as a guest was show number 17.
Yeah.
Now we're currently in the Troubled Men podcast world. We're on show 186.
That's, man,
going way back there. So yes, you appeared as a guest. A clean sample from Jeff Treffinger was the title.
Wow. A clean sample of what did I give you?
Well, because if you recall, we had done an original attempt, and we were still working out the microphone situation, and we recorded an entire episode with you that was so trashy and so noisy.
Oh, that's
that we
right.
Couldn't, yeah. It was unusable.
So that was at the Ring Room,
that
right?
was at the Ring Room, yeah. So we did a second one with the current setup, and then that was the clean sample.
That was when I was a boy.
We were all just...
I was just a mere lad.
Yeah. And then you appeared on episode 21 with Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah.
Dearly departed Brendan Gallagher. And then you've shown up, and you also have participated in this situation. What's the capacity was the word I'm looking for as a co-host on the Feral Zone with Sean Williams.
I get the call.
Well, you and I get along.
We do.
So far. It's been a while. We seem to be always.
I love you, Renee. We will always get along.
Right. Well, let's get our guest in here. We can discuss these. We have some topics we can discuss. But it's a guy I've been a big fan of for a long time, many years, decades even. He's a fantastic singer, guitar player, drummer, songwriter, band leader. He's his band's his current group Strawberry with Jeff Treffinger. His previous band's Big Ass Mustache, Strawberry Presents, Dolly Dillon with Jerry Kane Rossi. That was a favorite of mine, and many other groups. And we're going to get into all that and more. But without further ado, the great Mr. Chris Strawberry Brooks. Welcome, Strawberry.
Hey, glad to be here.
Yeah, man, glad to have you here.
Quite an honor.
It's an honor for us to have you for sure. Well, you know, before we get into all of your background, you know, some things that have been going on recently that I jot down in my notes, and actually this is the last show that I will do with this notebook, and it will be retired because I only have one more clean page.
Yeah.
So this will be the seventh notebook that I'm retiring from the Troubled Men or Feral Zone podcast.
Do you bronze them?
No, I keep them. See, I keep them. Sometimes I refer back to them. I actually have two of them here because I went back to notebook six for that intro. But, something in doing my research, I was looking back through the Mermaid Lounge files, and because our guest Strawberry played there many mm-hmm. times, was active during that time, the Geraniums, that was our home club. And I ran across a story that somebody had put up from like 2008 or something. And it was some dinky little blog post, but he was telling a story about being on tour with his, like, kind of cabaret circus band, and they came through and played at the Mermaid, and whoever the manager was maybe on his way out. I'm not sure who it was. I have an idea, but it was maybe he'd already been fired, but he was still going to do one more shift, and he got totally wasted. And according to the band, at the end of the night, he said he passed out on the stage after the gig and said, "Take whatever you want." So
you mean Chris Lane?
Well, yeah, too. I was thinking it might be a recent guest. Shout out to Chris Lane.
There it is.
One of my favorite people in the world.
I love Chris.
Yeah.
But, these guys didn't mention Chris's name. They said they didn't remember his name, but they said, so we proceeded to load up all the booze that we could load from the bar into our van, and then we went on to Austin. And then y'all came in the next. Do you remember that?
Well, I remember Brendan coming okay. in the next day. Brendan, was always there first thing in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And that was Chris's swan song. But he and Brendan never saw eye to eye. It was hilarious.
That's what he said.
There was a book in the back on the desk in the Mermaid where the manager was supposed to write, what we were low on or what we needed to order.
Uh-huh.
Or
inventory, yeah.
Inventory or, if somebody was misbehaving or some sort of crap.
Oh, okay.
But Chris would always write like really nasty, pithy notes to Brendan.
Like he thought he was going to win him over with this.
They were interesting. I read a few of them. Yeah. I was like, these are terrific. Yeah. He had they never saw eye to eye.
Yeah, yeah. He was saying that. He was saying how that there was friction, always friction there. I could kind of imagine that.
Yeah, yeah.
I could picture it.
In fact, in the spirit of things, I'm reaching out to him because I want him to be the MC at the Mermaid reunion.
Oh, yeah.
I think
nice.
He'd be a perfect MC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And since Brendan's passed away, there's no rub.
Right. Sure. Sure. Simplifies things, yeah.
In some ways,
yes. In many other ways, it's way more complicated. Chris was a recent guest of the Troubled Men podcast.
Oh, and, great.
We touched on his time, his tenure there at the Mermaid Lounge and some of the interactions with Brendan. Well, and speaking of that, the Mermaid, we have a Mermaid reunion coming up.
Yeah.
That's,
we do.
October 13th. It's going to be at the Broadside there.
That's right.
And who do we have playing? So the remaining Geraniums.
The remaining Geraniums are confirmed. We have Strawberry is confirmed.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
We're going to have Hotchkiss. Art Boonparn is going to resurrect Hotchkiss.
Oh, okay. Wow, nice.
Egg Yolk Jubilee.
Nice.
Is on the bill.
I heard $1,000 car is confirmed.
$1,000 car is confirmed. Sunrise, Sunset. White Bitch.
Okay.
Is on the bill. The New Dopey Singers. We've got a bunch of people who are not confirmed, who are still trying to figure it out.
Quintronomous Pussycat, any?
I haven't had them on yet, but I may reach out and...
They certainly cut their teeth there at the Mermaid.
They played once.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they played once.
Okay, well, Quintron played on his own at least once. At least
just one time.
Just once? Okay.
Just one time.
Just
it was
a
great.
Stepping stone.
It was great.
For Quintron.
I remember I helped him load in the B3.
And yeah,
that was great.
That was fantastic.
Well, I remember that gig. Well, I remember he opened, first time I ever saw him, he opened for Glenn Styler.
Right.
And we were both on that Glenn Styler gig.
We were. Yeah, we were in that band. And I just, somebody sent me a picture of that band recently.
Okay.
You, me, Alex, Carlo, and Glenn Styler.
Yeah. I have a few of those, a few choice shots from the Mermaid. You can see the Mermaid cutout.
The steel piece that Maria
steel
made.
Steel piece, yeah. Yeah, nice.
Yep. Brooke Lamb. Blackula,
Black Lamb, you know, has a hard time coming down.
Gotcha. Yeah. Just curious.
No.
I'm a fan.
I am too. Yeah. I love Blackula. I tried to do the Pendletons, but Mike Hurt can't make it.
Well, that's going to be a terrific day. You know, it's Strawberry, I don't know if you were here. I didn't see you when we had the Chaz Fest reunion. Not reunion, but Chaz Fest.
When Pigs Fly Again.
Yes, the reboot. And that was a terrific day, one of the most fun days I can remember. And I anticipate that this this Mermaid reunion show will be similar to that. You know, a lot of people coming out of the woodwork that we haven't seen. Gathering of the tribe.
Yep.
Well, speaking of the tribe, you know, as we age, move on in years, you know, we see what used to be our edgy subculture that we saw as our own get co-opted, turns up, more and more in the popular zeitgeist. And I was walking in Lowe's last week, you know, Lowe's a big hardware superstore.
No, I'm familiar.
I'm hearing like pretty loud, you know, it's not like a lot of loud music there, but I'm hearing, it's like, who's playing the fucking Cramps
in Lowe's?
In Lowe's. Down, 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 down.
Whoa.
I'm going, what the fuck is that? It sounds like the Cramps, but I mean, it was way away. And I'm thinking, is that on somebody's phone, somebody's ringtone or something, you know? And every once in a while I hear it again. And then it goes away. And, so as I'm checking out, I'm getting closer to the front, and now it's getting stronger. I'm going, okay, I got to find out where this fucking Cramps music is coming from. And I go over in the Halloween decorations that they have on display there.
By the Garden Center?
By the Garden Center, yes. You know the...
Oh, you are familiar.
I hang out there.
Yeah, sure, don't we all? I mean, just looking for work, you know.
That's not what I'm looking for.
Okay. then I see it. It's a figure of the Wednesday character from the Wednesday show. It's a big statue.
And that's
of
where
her,
the Cramps is.
And they're playing
from.
The Goo Goo Muck, you know, the song that she dances to that became such a sensation. So
right.
There you go. Iggy, Lust for Life, it's all over every cruise commercial, and now the Cramps, Goo Goo Muck is penetrating. It's got some deep penetration there.
It's been co-opted.
Yep. How do you feel about that, Strawberry? How does that make you feel? Does that make you feel more like we're winning or they're sucking our souls from us?
I mean, the members of the Cramps are still around, huh?
Well, one of them is Poison Ivy. And then, you know, they had many bass players who are still around, or several bass players who are still around. But Nick Knox, sadly, is gone.
It would have been nice for them to get, you know.
Of course. Lux Interiors.
Right.
Quite gone.
I mean, I'm sure they prefer to be on the outside instead of embraced or co-opted. But I avoid Lowe's.
Really?
Yes, I
did. More of a Home Depot man?
Not even that,
okay.
No.
Okay, sticking with Ace Hardware.
Exactly. I'm an Ace Hardware guy.
I like that, too.
I respect that.
I can't tell you what they play there, but...
Yeah, not the Cramps.
Yeah, no.
Okay, well...
It depends. They're all, you know, they're all independently owned.
Yeah, which is kind of a cool aspect of it.
Yeah. I do like the thing, and I told Glenn Styler about this when he first got his house. He's like, what do I do about this? If I go and, you know, I have this thing I need. I said, look, don't go to Home Depot. Go right down there to the Ace Hardware on Veterans. Go in there. Tell them what you need. The guy will take a personal interest in you. He'll walk you around. He'll find the exact thing. He'll ask you questions. He'll give you advice. He goes, wow, really? It's like, yeah, man. And then after the experience, it's like, wow, that was so cool.
It is. This is cool. I remember when I first moved into my house on Grand Route, I went to Armstrong Hardware to buy a gas fitting for a heater. I couldn't hook it up properly. I'd never seen a gas heater that you put in your house. Yeah. And it was old. Uh-huh. And I had a fitting, and I couldn't make the thing work. And I walked down there with the hose, and I told him, I want to connect this to get to my heater. And he looked at me, and he said, where do you live? And I said, what does that matter? He goes, where do you live? And I told him, and he goes, no, you live far too close to me for me to let you do that. And then he took a personal interest in me,
yeah,
and
sure.
Sold me the correct fittings. Because nice. What I was planning on doing was highly dangerous.
Okay.
I had no idea. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Shout out to those neighborhood hardware stores.
Yeah, thank you.
I dig that. Well, you know, that's a good thing. We still have some of those around, but I did see in the news this past weekend that Louisiana made another list. It was a list of the 10 worst states to live in. And guess where we were?
Number one.
We were number one worst state to live in.
Oh.
By whatever set of criteria they were using, you know, I assume.
We're number one.
Yeah, well, you know, and apparently this
we'll
was not... It was sometime just before that, a month or so, maybe U.S. News and World Report had also found Louisiana to be the worst state to live in by whatever criteria they were using.
Yeah, everybody needs a good, bad example.
Okay. But, you know, the problem is you think about, well, where would you go? I got nothing. You know, I feel like if you're not going to be here in New Orleans, I don't.
Well, have you ever ventured out of New Orleans?
I mean, you know, I go on the road.
Oh, that's true. But I mean, in the state of Louisiana, do you like travel around for vacation in Louisiana?
No. I try not to leave New Orleans except for work, you know?
Yeah. I had the occasion to go to Lake Charles several months ago.
Oh, bless your heart.
Oh. Spent a few summers there. Spent a couple.
You did?
Yeah. I was in this governor's program up there when I was like
rehab.
Yeah, well, it was pre-rehab. I was still working my way to rehab. But no, I was like 11 years old, 9, 10, around there. It was my parents wouldn't send me to summer camp. Uh-huh. And so I always would wind up like at work camp, which was on some kind of construction project that my father was doing for a friend. And that was not fun for me because I didn't enjoy that.
I'm so sorry, Renee.
That's all right. I discovered a lot of things that I know enough how to do that I know I don't want to do them. So that was, it was instructional for
right.
me. But I did find out about this state-supported summer program that you could go to. You had to kind of test into it. But then I went there and lived on the campus of McNeese State University.
My God, I never knew this about you.
For 7 weeks each summer. And met all kind of crazy people. I had, just to give you an example, in fact, the person that turned me into a bass player was Sylvia Kushner, who taught orchestra there. And her son was Tony Kushner, the great playwright who wrote Angels in America.
Wow.
You know, wrote writes all the screenplays for Steven Spielberg nowadays. He was my counselor my second year there. He was a former camper there at the,
wow.
at the thing. So it was
come on.
Yeah, so it was
yeah, that's really cool.
It worked out well for me. Got to escape the...
So Lake Charles was very good for you.
You know, but I could see that if I wasn't in the program, Lake Charles wouldn't have been... it's no New Orleans, I'll say that.
No.
Well, for myself, I'm from upstate New York originally, but I moved here in 90, and I started leaving in 92, and I must have... I mean, I lived all over... I just kept finding different places to check out and... Play music, Boston, Minneapolis, Seattle, Washington, Portland. And every time I would be there for a while, and I would just end up back here. They're just, to me, you know, nothing like it. So,
right.
If it's the worst place to live, well, somebody's got to live here.
Sure.
So
not everybody can have.
Right. Exactly. That's the thing. Like, come on down and see how you do.
Give it your best shot.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll, it'll keep the crowds down.
Right. Bingo. Right.
Bingo.
Right. Well, you know, as Ray Nagin would say,
who's the dumb ones now? Who's the worst ones now? Yeah.
Right.
No one comes here.
Our former mayor, Ray Nagin, you know, when we had the sky high murder rate, he would say, well, we're keeping the brand out there. So I guess, in a sense, that we're also making these lists, we're keeping the brand out there.
There you go.
Hey, yeah, we have a reputation. We got to live up to it.
Sure. Well, Strawberry, let's get into to your background. Let's go back to the origins of a Strawberry.
Sure.
So you said you're not from New Orleans. Tell us about where you grew up.
So I grew up. This is where it could get Anyway, so I originally was born in...
Don't freeze up.
Yeah, I was born in... I told you, I'm open to answering any question. Make sure you cut me off when I've said enough. I was born in Norfolk, Virginia, and I was given up for adoption. So I was adopted by a couple, and they ended up getting divorced, and I went with the mom, and we moved to upstate New York, which is central to New York. I was about an hour away from the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Okay. So a little town called Norwich, New York, which actually Norwich has changed quite a bit. You just played a festival there, like, which was unheard of. Part of the reason I moved to New Orleans was because I wanted to widen my horizons of music that I was interested in, et cetera. Which you did not find there at the time, but times have changed. Anyway, you got a chance to play there, so I think that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, we played there. They have a blues society, and I saw they had a big blues festival.
Yeah, they do.
At the
county fairgrounds now.
That John Papagrow was up there with his band playing, yep. And had a whole bunch of other people.
It's pretty amazing. You know, I had talked to a couple of friends of mine and told them, you got to go check this out. But I said, you guys don't understand. Like, for me, like, growing up there and then living here and, like, and seeing what y'all are doing up there, it's incredible to me. Like, it's only a town of about 6,000 people. It's not a lot of people. And for them to have, like, some, you know, some names that I know and people from here and then just other big names in those genres, it's pretty amazing. So, but anyway, we settled down there. I grew up. I started, had an interest in music right away, pretty much from what I can remember. We had a piano in the garage of the main house, you know, I first was living at, and then we moved out to the country eventually. But I would plink around on the piano and have a natural affinity already for it and figure out songs. So I joined.
So you're figuring out songs? Were you starting to like try to want to write your own songs or not quite yet?
No, it was just one of those things, like the music, it just flowed. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the... To me, that's one of the God-given gifts that I have is music. When I'm open and I have that channel open, it just comes. So it's hard to explain.
Nice.
And it's not always there, but I know that was my first experience with it. I just could go to the piano and just figure stuff out and just play stuff.
Now, does that feel have like a divine sort of feeling to you? I don't know how religious you are.
I'm not super religious, but that's that's a direct pipeline almost, you know, to me.
Right.
And like I said, it comes and it goes. Luckily, right now it's happening again. So that's one of the reasons I'm grateful for Strawberry and for Jeff and the other guys in it it had been a while since it had happened. But anyway, with this piano, like eventually we got rid of it and we moved to the country. So I joined this marching group at 9 years old called the Lancerettes.
You marched with a piano?
No, the piano was gone at this point, yes. No, that would have been great, though.
So you're playing Manny Chevrolet's role.
I've been method acting all week.
Okay, all right.
Believe it or not, I was not able to do that. But I played the snare, you know.
Okay.
And
what sort of group? Was it like a drum and bugle corps sort of group?
Kind of, but there were no bugles. It was just drums.
And flags.
And flag girls and twirlers and... And nice. That was it.
This is something that had been going on for a while.
Yeah, it was a little group that someone had put together in that town to give the kids something to do.
Nice.
And it became kind of
parades.
Local parades, but we also would go to Syracuse, New York, and some of the bigger cities to perform in these competitions. And we actually would come in, you know, I think probably because we were so young and handsome and cute and all that stuff. Right. Like, and we were good at what we did. Uh-huh. There wasn't a lot going on. So, you know.
So
it's farm country up there. So yeah.
Right.
So
that must have gotten you like that's kind of a band experience where you're playing music with people, you get in a van, you go drive somewhere.
Yeah, on the bus. Yep.
People treat you in a special way when you get to wherever you're going.
They do, yeah. We all got to stop for milkshakes afterwards or something, you know.
Nice.
And try not to get overheated and throw up on the bus.
Right. So yeah,
which I probably did.
Early band training.
Yeah, know? Exactly. But it definitely was good. But I think a main thing that came from that is just my sense of rhythm. Everything is based around that for me. Yeah. The way I play the guitar, the way I think of songs, rhythms are very important. So I think of that. But you know, eventually I switched to saxophone in grade school. And I started out playing alto sax, and then I switched to tenor sax, and all the way until 10th grade. But once I got to high school, I was playing in, you know, every band they had, field band, marching band, concert band, jazz band, et cetera.
Right. So. Nice. I was also alto saxophone
and then played
tenor in the summer band before I started playing bass.
Nice, so, nice. There you go.
It's a good instrument to play because it's not like trumpet where, you know, you can pretty much get a sound right away on the saxophone.
Right.
It's not a struggle. You know? It's only one place.
Yeah,
to play
I was
going to
say
note.
There's only one way to do a lot of that. You know,
right. Well, cool. So you're playing in all these groups, and is that a identity for you? It's a place to be comfortable. You're comfortable in that being in all these bands, obviously.
I was, but the band director, Mr. Burke. He and I did not see eye to eye. We bumped heads a lot. And so around that time, I had heard my first taste of New Orleans brass bands, which was the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, nice. Whatever album they had out, you know, in probably like 86, 87. I think it was Voodoo or right before Voodoo. But anyway, okay. So we were playing a lot of Chuck Mangione and in Chicago. And I was just like, no, there's this other stuff out there.
This was in high school.
Yes.
Okay.
And so we just bumped heads so much and I had my first, I never made first chair in jazz band. I made second chair, but I had my first solo for a jazz concert coming up and on the sheet music, it had like a suggestion for the solo, like something to kind of follow.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of used that to start out, but I like dissonance a lot. Uh-huh. And so I was like doing my thing and he was just like, what are you doing? Like, you can't do that. And I was like,
Mr. Burke.
Right. So you have to play what's on the sheet. And I said, no, that's a suggestion. Like it's not a solo. Like a solo is what
I'm
feel.
Improvising, right.
When I'm playing. And because we bumped heads so much for field band, he decided to, as a way to punish me, he took me off a saxophone and made me pick up a trumpet because he didn't have enough trumpet players to fill out the formation. And so I had to pretend that I was playing the trumpet during like field band, which is, you know, when you're like halftime shows, when you're doing all the formations, et cetera. And
fuck this guy.
And eventually I learned
Mr. Burke.
Eventually
I'm gonna go fuck this guy up.
No. You'll probably regret some of those sayings once I get to the end of this.
Okay, all right.
I'm sorry.
Go on.
But eventually I learned how to play the trumpet.
Oh no shit.
And so I would do the warm-ups and he got mad and he was like, I don't want you playing the trumpet. I'm like, but I'm learning. You have me doing it. Like, at least let me, you know, do
better.
What I could do. Right, exactly. Pretending to play the trumpet.
I've seen you play trumpet now that you mention it. Haven't I? Perhaps. No.
I don't know. Anyway, so at some point it was just too much of an impasse and I quit all band stuff and I ended up joining the wrestling team I like went completely opposite way.
Okay.
And wrestling was big where I grew up. So I remember being a nerdy band guy and singing in a choir or whatever, so joining the wrestling team. And there was a brief period where I was doing both. So I was a Renaissance man. You know, you either did one or the other. You didn't do sports and band. I mean, that just wasn't heard of, you know, where I grew up. So I do take that as a sense of pride. But eventually after that I picked up a guitar and I started teaching myself, you know, how to play guitar, and that's kind of what led me into, you know, where I am now. But I'm actually trying to get a saxophone now. I would like to get that going. That's one of the main reasons I moved here. That and of some friends of mine. So Mr. Burke in our impasse, and then me listening to the brass band music from down here. And then also my friends and I saw The Big Easy, which came out in 88, I believe, or 89, which is probably the worst representation of New Orleans you've ever seen. But I was like, Dad, look at this place. It's got all the brass bands, and it's like so cool. Like, they got their own language, and
Gone with the Wind accents.
Everyone says share.
Exactly. Yeah, right. And there's a parade all the time. So that's part of the reason I moved down here, is because of Mr. Burke and then that movie. So
what about wrestling? You're getting back into
wrestling. I'm still gonna go fuck them up.
Into wrestling.
You know what? You know, years ago they had a Ninth Ward Wrestling League, which probably nobody remembers, but a friend of mine, Victor and Brad, and
like professional wrestling or collegiate wrestling, like real legit wrestling you're talking about.
The Ninth Ward No, that was just people like putting on like a promotion, like they were wrestling, you know. I think one of the wrestlers' one of the wrestlers' name was Victor Pudding Pants, and he would put pudding in his singlet, and then he would go out there and wrestle. And so you had to deal with that as well. And then some people weren't aware that it was pudding, right? Some people were not aware it was pudding.
Sure.
So anyway,
can't be too careful, man.
Yeah, but I didn't join that league at the time. I was too busy playing guitar.
You know, wrestling is like the has the most hardcore of all the athletes.
It is.
I've heard people talk about being in the wrestling team where the workout is so hard, people would just be like passing out throwing up and leaving. And the rest of the guys on the team would be happy. It's like, oh, good, one more asshole gone.
Wrestling's brutal.
It is. So you're always.
I grew up. It was really.
Yeah, you're always having to make weight. You know, it's a bunch of farmers' kids, like where I grew up. So that was a big thing. They all chewed tobacco. They all dipped, as you would say,
right.
And they were on the wrestling team. I mean, that was a bigger sport than football and basketball were at the time. Mm-hmm. So I had to make weight, and I can remember us setting the sprinklers off because it got so hot and steamy in the wrestling room, you know, and all that fun stuff. But what I wanted to do was box. I was always interested in one-on-one. What can you do against another person?
Nice.
You know,
I'm a fan of that.
But
watch it.
But I've been wearing. I've had poor eyesight since fourth grade, so I just this is before contacts and anything like that. So the next best thing was wrestling because you didn't have to. You know, you're right there. You didn't have to be that far away. Right, so that's how I ended up. And I actually had a winning record. I was somewhat successful. I beat a state champion. In my second year wrestling, for one match, I was on junior varsity. The varsity guy, he couldn't wrestle, so I took his place, and I ended up winning. So that was beating that guy. So that was and I didn't know at the time that he was, you know, a former state champion, none of that. So it was that was kind of a highlight. But
nice.
Yeah,
cool.
Jeff, you have a bit of a amateur boxing background, don't you?
And actually, wrestling brought me.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was junior Golden Gloves.
Are you serious?
Competition.
I'm impressed.
You have a good story involving the end of your
amateur
boxing career.
The way I got into boxing was we used to, in the wintertime in Jersey, we would wrestle.
I was going to say Golden Gloves. You have to be like, that's my
I was
neck
good.
Of the woods,
I was good. And we had, I was CYO. I beat a kid publicly in wrestling, and he was so embarrassed. He goes, "You're going to box me." And he brought me because he had to get back at me because I beat him in front of the whole, you know, they made us wrestle. I didn't know what I was doing, but I pinned him.
Yeah.
And he got pissed off at me and he's like, "You're coming to CYO boxing so I could beat the fuck out of you." Right. So I did. And this Mr. Martinez was our coach. We didn't have a ring. We had folding chairs. And if you got beat out of the ring, you would you know, do a backflip over the folding chairs. And I'm ambidextrous. So Mr. Martinez found that out that I could jab with either hand.
Mm.
And so I rose quickly because I could come out in the second round and totally have a surprise punch. And then the guy, whoever I was fighting, was like, what?
Are you naturally a southpaw?
No, I'm okay. Well, I write with my left hand, but I throw it with my right.
I got you.
But
similar here.
This went on and on and on. And I started he entered me into this junior golden gloves for, like, you know, young teenagers. So I had about three matches and I won. One, two, or three. I can't remember. And then we fought in Newark and I fought this kid. Same weight as me. He didn't give a shit which hand I fought with. And he unmercifully destroyed me. I was crying. Oh. I was bleeding. My mouth was bleeding. They had to stop the fight, and I told Mr. Martinez, I said, I'm never doing this again.
He cured you.
Terrifying. Like, I still have nightmares of this thing. Like, once every 6 years, I'll wake up like, fuck! Leave me alone. Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah, Golden Gloves, though. That was a big deal, when I was a kid. So
yeah, wrestling is a lot better than boxing.
Yeah.
I like them both.
Wrestling to me is like, you got to have some intelligence. That's why I was successful. I mean, I was a nerdy little kid.
Yeah. Well, you're a musician.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I definitely utilized some of like physics and weight and, you know,
right,
and balance and all that into it. Sure. And I was decent at it. So,
well, let's get back in. So you graduate from high school or you leave high school.
Graduated.
Okay. Right on. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
So then you
gradually left high school.
Yes, I graduated.
Right. So you're starting bands of your own now in Norwich?
No. Okay. So we had a high school band called Paisley Skull, which, cuz we wanted to cater to the hippies and the punks.
Okay.
So Paisley Skull.
All right, I get it.
So I played harmonica and sang. That was my first real band. But in the meantime, I was still teaching myself how to play guitar and just would play, you know. Uh-huh. My friends would be hanging out. I was living on my own at that point, my last year of high school. So I had the house and people would come and hang out. And believe it or not, I just remember this. The Elks Lodge was giving away a piano that they didn't need, and it was down the street and around the corner. And so my friends and I, we went down and grabbed it and wheeled it down the street and left it in the front yard for about a month and would mess around with out there. And then finally they were like, you got to put that inside. So we put it inside. But that was my second piano. I had a piano again. And okay. So I got to mess around with that. But nothing serious, but mostly guitar. I was really starting to get into guitar. And then so I was teaching myself that and just playing. And then eventually, when I did move down here, you know, which was in 1990, I started playing on the street. But before I did guitar, I was also messing around with the harmonica. So I got a harmonica and I would stop my feet in time and play the harmonica and sing. I didn't just play the harmonica. I would stomp and play and sing all at once. And I started playing on the street.
In New Orleans.
Yes, in the French Quarter.
So you just came down here.
Busking.
Yep.
Didn't know anybody ahead of time?
Well, my friends, a couple of my friends who had watched the movie with me, The Big Easy, had moved down here. One had moved back already, but one was still down here. And so I actually was in the Navy for a very short period of time, for about 7 months, made it through basic training, and then got a medical discharge for various reasons. My heart is abnormally small, which I didn't realize. Huh. So I was on the sub program. I was in the sub program, but they couldn't afford to put me down underwater for like 3 months at a time with the risk of like maybe having a, you know, something happen, because of that. So,
right.
So anyway, I got discharged. And so I had this money and I got out and I found out one of my friends was still down here. And so I got on the Greyhound and came down, and so was working in restaurants and then started busking on the street.
Cool.
Nice, man.
What year was this?
90. 91.
So when you first got down here, Were there a lot of people playing on the streets? Who was out there? Like Lyons was he?
Jeremy,
still out there?
The guys in front of the A&P at the time.
Okay,
you know, and it's funny because Jeremy is from. And Greg Schatz are from Ithaca, upstate New York.
Right.
And I didn't know them, of course. But when they came down here, and then I realized Jeremy ended up marrying Valerie, who I went to high school with.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So and they have a child together. So that was kind of interesting. You know, we all ended up down here. But those guys, the guys who I called the Beatle people, a lot of people don't remember these guys, but it was a dad. They all had super blonde hair, and they played on Royal Street. It was like Royal and St. Louis, I think, or Royal and Conti, but they all had super white blonde hair, and it was a dad and his two sons, one a little older, one a little younger, and they played piano and guitar. And sang, but all they sang was Beatles songs.
Huh.
And I always call them the Beatle people.
Okay.
Them, I'm trying to think of it. They had Dave the fiddle player who played the fiddle. He never wore any shoes. He was always barefoot. I always wondered what happened to him.
And what kind of stuff were you doing on harmonica? Like blues stuff?
Yeah, blues. Mostly blues. But I remember getting hired to play. Bad Company had played at the Superdome, and they hired me at a bar on Decatur Street. They're having an after party there. And they got me to come in and play harmonica. And I like stood on a table and played harmonica while they were having a good old time there. And that was pretty cool. Like the guys in Bad Company were like, who is this guy? You know? And I got to meet those guys. Yeah, me too. Their early stuff is so good. Like besides their hits, they're such good material that they've done that were hits, which we've explored a little bit with Strawberry, and there's a couple songs I'd like to do, but yeah, it's such a great vocalist.
Yeah,
you know,
Paul Rogers. Yeah, what a great blues singer,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Free, his first band was fantastic.
Free, same thing.
And Mick Ralphs is a drummer in both of those bands, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool. So, how does that lead into you starting the first incarnation of Big Ass Mustache?
So, let me
stop you right there. We're going to get into all that in the second half, but this is actually a good time to take a little break and refresh our cocktails. So, everybody out there in the Feral Zone, you know what to do, and we'll be right back.
Looking, but your eyes were turned to me. In my dreams now haunted, I'm drowning in your sea.
Back with my guest co-host, Mr. Jeff Treffinger. I am Renee Coleman, back with our guest, Chris Strawberry Brooks. Now, Strawberry, I know you have been listening to the podcast for some time, so you're aware that we are on a listener-supported model. We have the PayPal and Venmo links there in the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook page. And you know, we rely on our listeners to support the show, cover our notebooks. I'm gonna have to buy a new notebook here, and we're having cocktails. So we do thank all of our sponsors, our patrons on the Patreon page. We love you that you're there for us week after week as we're putting out shows week after week. And also we have the Troubled Men Podcast t-shirts there in the show notes of every show. Also follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this podcast. Give us 5 stars. Helps us a lot. Costs you nothing. And we have some dates. Well, I actually want to give a shout-out to Mr. Jeff Treffinger's friend, Chuck Bischoff. Shout-out to Chuck Bischoff.
Yes, sir, Chuck.
Who's a big fan of this podcast and the Troubled Men podcast in particular. And he gave us some t-shirts from his business here, Bischoff Cabinet Making, up there in
Chatham, New Jersey.
Okay, yeah. Right on. So thank you, Chuck.
That's from Chatham.
There you go. I do
lovely,
too.
Lovely gift that you sent us there. And coming up, we have some dates. The Iguanas will be at BJ's Bywater Lounge on the 7th of September. I think that's when. 7th of September. And that's right before we leave for a Midwestern tour starting. Iguanas will be in St. Louis on September 10th, Bloomington, Indiana, September 11th, the 12th at Fitzgerald's in Chicago, 13th in Dayton, Ohio. Then we jet over to New York City, where we pick up on the Louisiana Calling tour with the great Sonny Landreth. And we have a few dates with them. And again, I'm going to be filling in for the great Dave Ranson on bass with Sonny Landreth. So I'll be playing with the Iguanas and Sonny Landreth there in New York City, September 18th at Iridium. And we're in State College, Pennsylvania after that, Columbia, Maryland, D.C. area, Richmond, Virginia. So you can go to iguanas.com, find all those dates. And also the Mermaid reunion on October 13th is coming up at the Broadside here in New Orleans with all those bands we mentioned, Remaining Geranium, Strawberry, $1,000 Car, Egg Yolk Jubilee, on and on and on.
I'll be at Lowe's.
And Jeff will be at Lowe's. And Strawberry will be at Ace Hardware.
Exactly.
Rockery Ace Hardware. No, it's a different one. But, okay, I think that's enough of all that. So back to our guest, Mr. Chris Strawberry Brooks. Now, you know, Strawberry, I didn't even know your name, your given name, until you sent me this thing. And I was reluctant to even use it because, you know, like Damien Youth, I don't know Damien's birth certificate name, and I don't want to. You know, it's like Lux Interiors. Like Alex Chilton knew his real name, but he would never tell anybody. You know, it's out there, but it's like that's not who he really is. He's really Lux Interiors, you know.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's too late for me to cut the other part out. But,
that's fine.
But you'll always be Strawberry to me.
Yes. To now, a lot of people, yes. So.
Yeah. Because that is the essence of you as a
Where
performer.
Where did that come from?
So
you're not a redhead.
Yeah. No, so when I was playing harmonica on the street at busking, and this also led into, you know, me starting to form my own bands, Big Ass Mustache number one. So Willie Dixon. So at this point, I had a friend of mine who wasn't a part of the original friend group from West New York. I talked him into moving down here, and he played sax. Mm. So. But we were close, you know, pretty close. So we were both working in the French Quarter, and there was one day I was busking on the street, and he came by and he was like, "Hey, Willie Dixon is appearing at Tower Records. You know, he's making an appearance."
Wow.
And he's just, you know, meet and greet or whatever. He was in town for some like appearances at schools or whatever.
Must have been like 1,000 years old at that point.
So I was like, let's run over there and see him. Willie Dixon is probably my, you know, biggest musical hero. I mean, you know, it's bass playing and just the songs he wrote and the people he played with. Yeah. So I ran over to Tower Records, got in line. I had my harmonica with me. And and there's Willie Dixon dressed in this immaculate white suit with a white derby and just the biggest grin. I mean, he's just larger than life.
Right.
And so I was like, hey, you know, I play harmonica on the street or whatever. And I don't know if it's because my face was red from running or whatever. But anyway, he signed my harmonica and it looked just like it said strawberry on it.
Okay.
And so when we got done, I showed my friend and he's like, what does that say? He's like, it looks like it says strawberry. And I'm like, I don't know. Why would he call me strawberry? You know, why would he sign a strawberry? And then that was it. My friend was like, your name is Strawberry. Like, that's you now. Because he knew my affinity for him. And I swear, ever since then, like, that's just, everyone just started calling me that.
That's,
I mean, that's
story.
Just how
good,
it works.
Good for you, so, Jeff. Yeah. I was going to skate right over that, yeah. That very obvious
really?
Point.
Yeah. I mean, I've known you for years. I never knew where that came
yeah.
from.
Named by Willie Dixon, man. Yeah. That's like being knighted. Or
exactly. He was
know?
Like, you can't
ignited.
Just ignore that.
Ignited,
yeah.
sure.
And then he did. He ended up passing not too long after that, so
yeah,
that made
man.
It even more. You know. So,
do you still have that harmonica?
I had it forever, and I think I had it in storage for Katrina, and you know, I lost a lot of press and recordings, et cetera.
19th anniversary tomorrow of Katrina.
I know.
Yeah, my kid's 20th birthday.
Wow, it flew
really?
By. Yeah. It flew by.
Yeah, it flew by. Yeah. It's like the shutters that flew by.
Exactly. That's one way to put it.
I mean, the 19 years since
yeah,
then.
Yeah. So, along that same note, so this friend of mine was working at we were working on Decatur Street at two different restaurants, and he had told me, hey, I saw this guitar at the French Market. He's like, it's red. It's perfect for you. You got to go get it. How much money do you have? I said, I think I have like $150. That's all I had. And he's like, well, I'll get it. I think it's like $200. I'll give you $50. You go get your $150 and we'll go over there. And so we went over there, and there's this K, made by K,
uh-huh.
red hollow body guitar that was tied to this, hung on a nail, like on a pole or whatever, and is like swinging around and like banging against it. And I was just like, look at this thing. Like, it was almost like, there it is. And I felt bad that it was, you know, getting bumped up against the thing. So I bought it, and I had that guitar forever. But so then I went from playing harmonica to starting to write just my own songs, and I hooked up with a group, Aaron Norris, rest in peace, Chris Corbell, Soup Chain, myself, a couple other people.
You know Soup Chain.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get into Soup Chain. Go on.
So we found this place on Decatur Street in front of the Crab Net. I don't know if you're familiar with the Crab Net, but it's a place that has tile in front of the storefront.
Okay, yeah.
And it's kind of a little
alcove. Right.
It's near the two Italian groceries.
Right, Progressive.
Right.
Central Grocery.
The acoustics on this tile were so good. That was our spot. So we would all take turns holding down that spot. So one of us would play for a while and the other one. But one of the main rules was you had to sing your own songs because there's too many people playing covers.
Right.
And we were like, we're not playing. Like, the test is, can you get a tourist to stop and listen to your stuff?
Okay.
And if you do a cover, it has to be so unique and off the wall, they almost don't recognize it. And then when they do, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so I hooked up with them, and that's just, it started going from there. I started writing my own stuff and just doing the spiel. We never sat there and we never stood there and played. I would just stand there, and then when someone came by, I'd be like, hey, you want to hear a song? I'll sing you a song to make your dick stand straight up. Sing you a song that would make your girlfriend want to take you back to the hotel room right now. Like, whatever spiel we had, you know what
okay.
I mean? And we just went from there, and I started getting pretty decent at that. So eventually, you know, I found a couple people to play with. But the first version of Big Ass Mushers, my friend who played tenor sax and myself, and we would play open mics at checkpoints in a couple other places. And I mean, we would play these songs and it would just be like free jazz mashed together with just the most absurd, you know, song lyrics you can think of. I think one of the songs was called Flying Baby Heads, and it was just literally about how you got to watch out for flying baby heads. That's all it was. But with weird free jazz stuff. And we had gotten all these baby heads from like Thrift City, I think, that we had taken off, that we bought the dolls and like got all the heads, and we were like
right.
throwing them out in the crowd, We did one performance. You know, that's how we do. We do one song, and that was it for the week. And people were like, stuck them on pool cues and we're waving them around and like it's just like just and they're just like, who are these guys? So that was actually the very first version of Big Ass Mustache. And Big Ass Mustache comes from, my friend was really into early 70s bands, late 60s, early 70s bands like Iron Butterfly and Deep Purple. Uh-huh. And so he's buying all the albums from the Olive Tree, which had a great record collection in the back of it. The Olive Tree was on Royal Street. And it just it had all kinds of great books and magazines, but in the back they had a bunch of records. And so all the covers were, you know, we were probably drunk one night and just listening to records and looking at the album covers, and all the guys had like these gigantic
mustaches.
We were just like, Big Ass Mustache would be a great name for a band. And I was like, it would be. And then that's it went from there. Like, I've used that name a few different times, but that was the very first version.
Well, you know, I think that's the first time I saw you performing. It was with some incarnation of Big Ass Mustache, and it seems like it was maybe a two piece or something, but I was struck by the kind of quiet intensity that you possessed.
Appreciate that.
And it's still something you possess now. It's just, you know, it's you. So I'm a fan. Yeah. But and this is like in the pre-Spellcaster Lodge days. I remember there would be like these house parties that Quintron and Pussycat would have, and I definitely saw Mariner's Ball. Were those house parties? Yeah. I know they still have that at the Spellcaster, but
like the Pearl and even Pussycat Caverns. You know what I'm saying? Like that
right,
was
right,
yeah,
right, right.
yeah,
yeah. That's
all those people
about.
From Olympia,
yeah.
Washington,
yep.
came down and started a scene.
Yep.
And there'd be like girls walking around topless at these parties, you know, but like it was La Dolce Vita or something, you know, like not.
Do you remember Food and Grog?
Yes. Yep.
That was pretty. That was pretty a lot of debauchery. That was exactly, yeah, yeah.
So that was good times, man. I was like, wow, this is cool. Okay.
That's when the Bywater and Marini were really swinging.
Yeah, that was a cool time. I agree.
Yeah. So you were kind of flourishing during that time. And then the next thing I know, you have Strawberry Presents. And to me, that was like, wow, man, what a fucking great trio. Tally on drums.
Yeah, he's a great drummer.
Pat Cronin's favorite drummer.
Tally Mulligan,
I didn't realize until the last time we had a Mermaid reunion, he's such a small guy, but he plays so hard. I didn't realize like how hard he hits the drums.
And he's like a producer's drummer.
He just plays,
and he's a good drummer for a singer.
Yeah.
He really understands lyrics.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you had Greg Easterly playing bass, who was like came out of being like a cellist, so had kind of a lyrical approach to playing bass. And, you know, as a trio, those guys shared your ethic of like the quiet intensity.
Yeah.
And we still have that CD that we bought then.
Awesome.
We still possess it. We still listen to it. And it still sounds as good as when it first came out. It definitely stands
up,
man.
Yeah, thank you.
That kind of bleeds into the Dolly Dillon.
Yeah.
And you wound up, you were the drummer in Dolly Dillon.
I was.
I was the organ player.
Were you?
Yes.
Oh,
that was you. Okay.
It was me.
For some reason, I always thought it was Pat.
Jerry Kane Rossi.
Yeah.
What a character.
I met you, baby, on a starry moody night. Going nowhere fast, falling stars in your eyes. It's got you to your sadness, to your fire, to those eyes.
Oh, yeah. I just talked to her on the phone on Sunday.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. No, I just, we did a bunch of recordings with this band at the Mermaid, and she has been taking songwriting classes in Seattle. And as a component of this class, she gets to pitch songs to you know, people who are in film, they've got a special name. They're not like A&R people anymore.
Music supervisors.
That's exactly what they are.
Yes, that's what they call them.
Right, that's what they call them. That's what she called them. And I'm like, what's a music? Anyway.
Right.
But I found all this stuff. I was on the phone with her, and she's like, do you still have that stuff? And I found the box under my desk where all the mermaid dats are, and I was rooting around in it while I was on the phone with her, and lo and behold, I found it.
Just got to find a dat machine.
I have a dat machine.
Oh, do you? Wow.
Yeah, I have a dat machine. And I hooked it up to, you know, my computer and my software, and remixed the two tracks.
Okay.
And sent her all those songs. So we've been in touch, and
wow.
You know, she's trying to sell those songs. But yeah, she's great.
That's very cool. Yeah,
great songwriter, really excellent human being.
I always dug where that band was coming from too. You know.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that band. It's a shame that it went so quick. But yeah.
Yeah, in those days it seemed like, you know, things would last. I mean, it was almost like another punk rock kind of era where. Bands would last for a few months and then they would kind of fall apart or morph into something that might be even better.
Yeah,
it's true. It was just, you know, those days when I was booking the Mermaid in those days, there was such a small, my, you know, people have Rolodexes. I had like one of those little mini notebooks, like where you would make your grocery list and throw it away, rip the pages out. Right. There's like 18 people I could make 30 bands or 40 bands.
Yeah.
You know?
Nice. It is great. It's such a small community that all cohabitated different bands. It was a really cool era.
Right. Well, we're still doing that, but we're much older now. It's
we are.
And you know, that was just rock and roll was cool at that point. You know?
Yeah.
It was I don't know. You talk.
Rock and roll is still cool.
Yeah.
I have to say, you know, for our people, especially I have so many friends, you know, we're all the same, from the same era and the same group, and we're still doing, they're just all doing amazing things. Like, I think we're really, in a way, rewriting, like, you know, what it is to be, you know, at this age group, like,
sure.
There, some of them are, you know, like me, I'm a single parent, you know, and I've raised my kid since he was 15 months old. He's about to turn 13 in a few days. But you know, I've had him since, you know, he was a wee lad,
right.
A tiny baby. And a lot of I have friends, same thing, like their parents, you know, and they're my age, but they still have young kids, and it's just, but they're doing amazing at it and traveling and making art and music, and I think it's pretty cool, you know what I mean, what we're still able, you know, what we're doing, of course. Yeah, look at this,
know,
guy
Renee too.
I know,
you know, everyone
Renee,
know.
Speaking of which, I have to put it on the record, I mean, you're one of my musical heroes, you know what I mean, heroes.
Oh,
like,
man.
Dude, you just fit in with so many people, and you have the right, I don't know, to me, approach to all of it. And anyway,
well, thank you.
I appreciate what you do.
Means
one of the best moments of my life was I had watched Renee play, and I, you know, at one point Tribe Nunzio was playing at Cafe Brazil, and Renee and Tana were like right next to the stage, and I was on the left side of the stage, and when we finished our set, I was walking off the stage, and Renee goes, "Man, I want to be in a band with you." I remember going to sleep with like the biggest smile on my face.
I would have been the same way, right?
Renee wants to be in a band with me.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
And then you called me to be in a band with you.
I did.
Which was one of my favorite bands I've ever played in my life, the Geraniums. It's, you know, it's a spiritual high point in my musical experience, for sure. So you have all these different incarnations, and then the millennium is turning over. 99 and 2000, you have a four-piece version of Big Ass Mustache once again.
Yep.
And Soup Chain is in it again, right?
Yeah, Soup Chain was in it again at
now,
that point.
Soup Chain.
He got fired from Big Ass Mustache the first time he was in it.
Uh-huh. But you weren't. You figured, let me give him a second bite of the apple.
Well, now, at that point, you know, I was being just as much of a as a goof as he was. So, okay. Yeah, as a screw up as he was. So it's like, well, might as well.
So then yeah. I notice in your timeline that there's like a 5-year gap that comes right after that. And I was going to ask, does Soup Chain have anything to do with that?
No, he doesn't. That was my own doing.
Okay. All right.
Let's put it out.
Continue.
So I took a break.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to take a break.
Sure.
A forced break.
Okay.
But it was a break.
Right.
And so I ended up over in, Acadiana area, and just was working, riding my bike to work and riding back home, but I was still listening to music, and then at some point I felt like I was strong enough to start playing music again. I just had to take a break for a while and get my head straight. Anyway,
sure.
And then you know, it's funny, and one of the few people I spoke to regularly during that time period was Glenn Styler. So him and I were in touch, and
nice.
He's just being encouraging and let me know what he was up to or whatever. You know what I mean? So that was nice.
He is a cornerstone of our community.
Oh, know? My God.
He's always there. He doesn't see many people these days. He sees me. He sees Jeff.
Right. Yeah. Basically you two.
No.
A couple of other people. Oh, yeah. Well, names we won't mention.
Yeah, that's good.
But man, it's like any time I have like a record, a band I'm playing in, a record that I'm on that we're sequencing or we're okaying mixes, I always, as a final check, I bring them over to Glenn Styler's house.
Oh.
Jeff does the same thing.
Every song I write, I bring to him.
And we get his feedback on it. And it's always so penetrating and, you know, insightful, and he has all kind of ideas and energy too. It's not, you know, he will actually get emotionally invested in this thing, because if it's your thing and you're into it and he likes you, he wants it to be as good as it can be.
That's well put. That's it.
That's
he's a true friend.
Man, yeah. You know, and he and I talk about all kind of things, and the subject of therapy comes up, and he's like, well, you know, Renee, therapy is for people that don't have real friends. I was like, well, I guess most people don't have friends like you, Brent. So anyway, so you're getting some counseling from Glenn Styler at this point? Okay,
yeah, exactly. So I decided to move back to, you know, I've been coming back to New Orleans a little bit, just seeing how it was and if I could, you know, handle being back here, et cetera. And so this was in 2009. So I moved back, and so I started Strawberry, which was with Jason Brettle, who was the leader of the Hill Country Hounds and also Los Pobrecitos.
Okay.
And then Larry Hall, Kenny Claiborne, and myself.
Kenny Claiborne.
Yes.
Playing the Mermaid Reunion.
Okay. And former Troubleman podcast guest as well. So,
oh, yeah. Good.
Yeah, yeah.
Former owner of the Mermaid Lounge.
Yeah. Mayor of Frenchman Street.
Absolutely.
Still down there holding down pot prison.
Right. We know who the real mayor of Frenchman Street is.
That's
though.
Right.
Linda. It's Linda.
It's Linda. It used to be our day.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But he abdicated.
Right. Yeah. So we're doing that. And then out of the blue, I get a chance to hook up with a band called War Amps, which was Paul Webb on guitar. Tom Beeman, who was with a band called Guster out of Nebraska, who had moved down here. Ray Cernick, who's in Sunrise Sunset. They are Sunrise Sunset now. And Dustin Reynolds, Dusty Crops, he played with Louie on all kinds of, you know, he played with Louie and those guys. He actually is marrying Terrence Simeon's daughter, Marcella, and they have a band together. So you should.
That sounds
they're,
cool.
They're starting to do such stuff, and we should be seeing them on the scene here soon.
Right on.
Anyway, that was a heavy band. That was like
okay.
I Hate God, like in that vein, some of the stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. But as a singer, I was doing some of that, but I also would sing, but like super high. Like I had, during that period when I was taking a break, I'd done some of this material where I was really like in a different vein of doing some heavier, harder stuff. And so it was really fun with that band. They had a singer, but he wasn't quite working out. So I came on board, and that was probably one of the most fun experiences I've had in a band, because I wasn't tied down to guitar. I wasn't tied down to anything.
Yeah.
All I had to do was get up there and sing and be in the front.
And you like that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And then we even got Jay Younger, who was a guitar player for White Zombie.
Uh-huh.
He had moved down here, and he was going to produce our first record. And typical New Orleans story, I'd gone out to L.A. to a party at the House of Blues to do some. We had our demo with two songs to do some, you know, schmoozing or
right,
whatever,
right.
Get it in the right hands. And while I was out there, I get a phone call, and they said, oh, hey, we decided we're just going to be a three-piece instrumental band. So Paul had left. I was out. I'm just like, what the hell? Anyway, the band, one of the few band, like the band, I think, would probably the most potential as far as what we were doing and who we had behind us at the time that I've been a part of, besides the current band, of course. But because I strongly believe in what I'm doing now. But anyway.
Right, right. So in my awareness, I didn't even realize you were back in New Orleans. I remember that, like kind of... 2009-10 when we had some kind of gig, we did Mermaid Associated gig, the Geraniums played there at,
that was down at Siberia.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
the Hi-Ho,
the Hi-Ho,
yep.
We had two clubs,
yeah, yeah, I remember, yeah. You delayed, you were supposed to play before the Geraniums, and you fucked off, and you came back so late that I was totally smashed by the time the Geraniums were supposed to play.
I remember that gig.
I'm not
you
sure.
You were like almost as smashed as Brendan was.
But then I didn't see you even after that.
Yeah,
point.
Yeah.
Until recently, then when Jeff. Jeff, we had the Geraniums, and we had the demise of half of the band. Everybody who's not sitting here right now has transitioned to the next phase of the Geraniums. And, you know, Jeff now putting his toe back in, recording some more,
yep.
Writing songs for the first time since the Geraniums, getting involved in that. And I was over recording at your house, laying down a bass track and listening to these things. And then you, as we're in this discussion, you said, oh, I'm the lead guitar player in Strawberry's band now. I was like, wow, really? Go on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I am. Well, I'm one of the lead guitar players.
Yeah,
we have three guitar players.
We have 10 at this point, don't we?
We just every day another guitar player shows up.
Interesting, interesting. Well, so
I don't forget, Andrew Beiser goes, oh, you're playing? Oh, I want to. What's it like? Yeah, I think you. He was like, oh, it's three guitars and a bass player and a drummer. Oh, never mind. No, thank you.
He goes, I don't see bands that have three guitar players on principle.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. So I went to see you guys, and I love the band. Again, Strawberry, I'm still a big fan. You still have, now this is kind of more of a rootsy approach than I'd seen previously with you.
Yeah.
But you still have the taste for the oddball covers. Like, what was the one you had, one like you would do Little Red Corvette or something?
Yeah, I did. Take me with you, which is basically a blues song if you
right,
break it down.
Right.
But yeah. Got to have a Prince song in there, but yeah, it was,
yeah. Take me with you. Yeah.
But a lot of thought goes into that stuff. So yeah, so after the implosion of what we were just talking about with War Amps,
uh-huh.
Right after that, I kind of went on tour by myself. And ended up hooking up with Greg and played in Nashville a little bit, and then went up the East Coast and over. Anyway, along the way, I had met my son's mother. We had met before years ago here in New Orleans, but reconnected, and then he came along. So, and then I ended up, you know, he came to, you know, I ended up with custody of him. So, so then there was a long break again because suddenly I have this kid I got to raise.
You're a parent.
And
yeah.
And this is somebody who I mean, I've never, you know, didn't even have a plant. Like, who's, I was like, who's giving me something, a living thing to take care of? Are you kidding me? Like, I'll never forget the first.
I didn't even have a plant.
The first.
You couldn't keep a plant alive.
I love that. Right. It's like, that's the best, you know, equation of.
Right. They're like, here, have this. Like, you get this kid now. The kid belongs to you. Here you go. So I'll never forget the first year. Like, literally, like, I would wake up every night and check on him in the morning. I'm like, oh my God, he's still alive. I don't know how I'm doing this, but he's still alive. He's still going. So anyway,
nice.
So I had to take a long break, but so I was able to do the mermaid, you know, reunions here and there, the last couple of ones we had, but never really any real band. Mm-hmm. And then once my son got a little older, I was like, you know, just for my mental health, I was like, this is such a huge part of me. I have to get out there and play. So I hooked back up with Jason. We've been talking, but I was like, let's do this. And it's been slow going. I mean, I think we've been working at it for over a year now, a year and a half almost. But, you know, took my time trying to get the different players. And, you know, we have Rob Schaefer on bass and David Greengold, you know, who's one of the owners of Wands and part of Los Bobositos, he's in the band as well. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have different personalities. We get along great.
Nice.
It's nice. I think they trust in what I'm doing. But, you know, I put a lot of thought. So a lot of this is coming from, so I basically sat at home for the last, you know, 10, 12 years, woodshedding, you know.
Yeah.
And then so that a lot of it, you know, to be able to get on stage and play it and we're being very careful about what we put out and where we play and what we do. You know, I am a musician, so I have an ego, of course. But some of it comes from, you know, we've paid our dues. We don't have to repay our dues. Like, let's just be smart about it. And
deliver it.
Exactly. As long as you can deliver and back it up, then we'll be fine. So, right. Exactly.
We rehearse Sunday mornings. From 9 to 11.
Sunday morning.
Yes.
Sunday.
That's the first thing. If you can do that, then 11. That's your first step into being able to play in this band. You got to be able to get up on a Sunday morning.
And right. It is sort of like kind of the perfect
monastic.
It's the perfect time to have a band rehearsal. Right. We rehearse in this, you know, warehouse land where we can't possibly bother anybody.
Right.
Okay.
And,
is this on the North Shore?
No. Okay. It's on Broad Street.
Oh,
right across from Zony Mash. Overhead door.
I know where that
door
is.
Yeah, overhead doors. Jason has a shop with a studio.
That's an interesting little spot.
It is.
You know, you drive by, everybody drives by that spot, but most people don't know that you can turn in there and that there's a whole little universe in there of people with all kind of art.
There's all kind of creative people back there.
Yep.
Okay, so 9 a.m.
All right. 9 to 11. Nice. And everyone shows up. I mean, you know, we're on a little break now, but...
Well, we're fixing to get back on it. We got some stuff coming up.
We got stuff coming up, yeah.
So we do that. We have a gig at the Pharmacy Museum on October 2nd.
October 2nd, Pharmacy Museum. That's in the French Quarter.
Correct.
Right, I'm not sure what street, but Charters.
It's on Charters.
Okay,
and
that's a good guess.
Yeah.
You know, I actually played on Bourbon Street this past weekend, played a Cajun gig.
Oh, wow.
Really?
5-hour Cajun gig. 45.
What did you do wrong?
45 and 15. Well, the great Rob Davis calls me. You know, Rob Davis, fantastic musician, keyboard player, drummer, band leader. And the band is Rob Davis on accordion, Dr. Sick on fiddle, Tyler Clements on drums.
Oh, really?
And me, Cranston's son.
Cranston's played on Bourbon Street.
And Cranston sometimes, I might have been subbing for Cranston on bass, actually, because he often plays in that band. Mm. But we played a room. I did one gig with him about 6 months ago. That was the first time I'd been in this room since I played it and got fired from the gig with Alex Chilton. He and I both got fired from the band. Actually, what happened was the drummer quit. He's like, because we turned around after one song, and Alex goes, did that slow down a lot? And he goes, that's it, I quit. And he walks out. And we're like, it was right in the middle of a set. And we're like, what the fuck, man? And we walk over to the bar and the manager goes, well, it's his gig. So actually, you guys are fired. So pack up your shit and leave, or you got to buy a drink. And we're like, okay. So we left and we went to the payphone and called Frank Riley, the booking agent in New York, that the DBs had passed a card to us when they'd come through visiting. Uh-huh. And we said, hey, man, maybe you can book us some gigs somewhere. That was the beginning of our whole trio. With Alex Chilton, the whole trio touring, which we're coming up on 40-year anniversary of that,
wow,
that occurrence. That was 1984. Anyway, I digress. Well, man, so great having you back in town, Strawberry.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
I'll be paying close attention. Looking forward to seeing you there at the Pharmacy Museum and seeing you at the Mermaid Reunion. And Jeff, thank you so much for showing up tonight and for showing up in my whole life.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, we're all lucky to know each other.
We're saving each other's souls.
Well, speaking of Jeff, of course, like it's an honor to have him in the band. I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, it's not something I ever thought would happen, but I was like, why not ask Jeff to see if he wants to do it? And so it's pretty amazing for me. So
it's a fun band, thank you for asking me. Yeah. I actually talked to Jason and I said, you know, if you're looking for a bass player, I've been playing a lot of bass. And then you called me up and said, do you want to play guitar?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's interesting being the old man in the band. You know, it's fun. It's fun. They actually listen to me.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. No, we do.
Voice of reason. Right on. Well, we're going to sign off here. Thank you so much again, Strawberry.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
And,
appreciate it.
I am Renee Coleman, signing off from Inside the Feral Zone. Good night.
Well, he ain't got no watch, and he ain't got no shoes. He just got them sit around the city, jelly rolling blues. He been caught dreaming on the street in the sun.
slide with